Hey, comedy fam, if you like the comedy advice on this podcast, you are going to love our newsletter. I send out weekly newsletters with comedy tips, updates on our live streams, and a lot more. So join it, linked in the show notes.
If I'm going to work on something and people are going to know that I had something to do with it, it's got to be good.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just can't let something go out the door that's not perfect. If it's not, if it's not up to like what I think is like an acceptable like quality standard, then, you know, I can't put my name on it, right?
Hot breath. Ahoy there! Merry day, hot breath-averse. This is your favorite host, Joel Byers, and you know what time it is. Hot breath. Yes, it's the best part of the day or night or morning, whenever you're listening to this. Thanks for hanging out with me and tuning in to Hot Breathisode 113. Woo! We made it. So if this is your first one, you have over 100 others to catch up with if you enjoy this one. If you're tuning in just for my guest today, please go back to the catalog, check it out. I'm all about entertaining and educating on here. And this episode will be no exception. The one, the only, Lauren Holly, ladies and gentlemen, is on the podcast today. Yes, Lauren Holly, legitimately one of my favorite photographers, period. I've just always been a fan of photography and was like, I would like to learn more about the actual, you know, strategy of photography and the inner kind of tips and tricks into photography, whether you're a professional or even just somebody with an iPhone at a bar trying to take better selfies. Lauren is a pretty much a 20-year plus professional in photography and design and branding. She is a owner and founder of Graphic Nation, which is kind of a creative studio that houses all of those services if you're interested or need any of that. Award-winning. Her work's been featured in Times Square. So I was so honored that she was being able to find the time to sit down. So I will stop filling up your time and we will get to the interview. Thanks again for hanging out. If you do learn something from here, I would love to hear from you. All my social media is at Joel Byers Comedy or at Hot Breath Pod. Really even just sharing it. If you see the link, you see it on here, tell a friend, word of mouth, tweet it out, whatever you got to do. Spreading it word of mouth is certainly the best way to get it out there. And if you want to hear yourself on Hot Breath, you can leave an iTunes review. We just had our 132nd iTunes review left. I read all of them live here on the air. And if you're thinking about, oh, what to do for Christmas, an iTunes review is a very good gift. Or if you want to take it a step further, we have a Patreon page called patreon.com/hotbreathpod. You can go contribute to the podcast there while getting kind of exclusive content I only post on there. And I also have a comedy writing book, if you're interested, that's on joelbyerscomedy.com on the shop link if you still need to do your last-minute Christmas shopping. But I digress. Let me quickly read this iTunes review and we will get into it. It was a 5-star review from Nick Namesake. It said, I'm sorry it took me so long to get around to leaving a review. The podcast deserved 5 stars right out the gate. It's always a fascinating listen. Joel is a wonderful interviewer. He does his research and gives his guests a real chance to talk. His gentle guidance keeps the conversations flowing, but he isn't afraid to really dig in to uncover a wealth of information. This is a funny and, more than that, informative podcast. I'm always looking forward to the next episode. Congratulations on your run to date, and I'm looking forward to many more. Boom. Dab. Yes, I'm dabbing on audio. I guess you can't see it, but you can in spirit. Thank you, Nick Namesake. If you want to hear your review or just show support for the podcast, please do. It's greatly appreciated, and it feels great. A lot of you have been saying, like Nick Namesake, took me a while to get around to leaving this review. I know I've been meaning to. So it's the holidays. Tis the season. But tis the season, and tis the time to get on with this interview with an amazing photographer, amazing just creative mind in general that we really learn a lot from. So, that being said, There's only one thing left to do, and that is inhale a hot breath.
Well, thank you for doing this.
With Lauren.
First off,
Holly.
I have to thank you for your valuable time. I know you're very busy doing a lot of things, being an entrepreneur slash artist. You're someone who's actually been able to make a living at doing it.
So far, yeah.
Yeah, so congratulations. So far, so good.
Thank you.
That's why I like interviewing people on here. This whole podcast, since you said you hadn't listened to it.
I'm sorry.
No, I appreciate the honesty. So pretty much this whole podcast is just about learning. Uh-huh. And whatever somebody's expertise is, I like to just extract as much information from them as possible on that. So you have a couple expertise I would like to dive into. But specifically, I guess, you did just kind of give me an hour TED talk on photography. But I'd like to even really go even a little bit deeper on just the details of it. You know, like I interviewed B Chill on here and mm-hmm. we talked about photography some, but it was branding was a big thing. Mm-hmm. And like he started a business with his wife. That's what I'm looking to be doing as well. So mm-hmm. the big thing, photography is how I found you. You right. did this photo of, it was the moons. Was it, what was the?
It was the eclipse or something?
The eclipse.
Oh and my you, gosh. That was very recently. Yeah.
Yeah, it was amazing. And I don't Thank even you. Know how I stumbled upon it, but it was on Instagram and it was like moons in like the different stages that uh-huh. the eclipse went through and the colors and everything.
Yeah.
Were just amazing.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that that was the first picture that you had seen of mine.
Yeah.
Which is funny because that one was, I shot the eclipse. It was the first time I'd ever done that. You know, I had to scramble to like get the right filter and all that kind of stuff because shooting the eclipse is kind of a big deal. I guess it's kind of hard. And if every blog that I read said, if you've never shot the eclipse before, like don't even try it. Just sit back and enjoy it because it's too hard. You'll mess it up.
Well, because the lighting?
Well, it just happens so fast and like with the filters and like the timing of it and like, you know, I don't know. It's just like, I was like, well, you know, I know enough about photography. I've been doing this long enough. I think I can do it. You know?
Yeah.
So I ordered the filters, but the whole cycles of the eclipse, like the one that I did was probably not like on like the lunar event type procession of how it actually like happened.
Mm-hmm.
I just chose my best pictures in various stages. I didn't do the like, you know, geeked out sciencey like here's phase one, here's phase two, like because there is a lot of those. You can find
I
them
saw
on
that. Yeah,
you can find a lot of them on the internet, and like if you're like on Flickr, if you look for like eclipse pictures, like people like really get like very nerdy about like at this precise time, and you know, here's the exact placement of this part of the cycle.
Uh-huh.
I just strung mine together in a visual way that was appealing to me.
And it was appealing. It caught my eye and clearly a lot of people. I think that's what I was looking at. Maybe your pictures of eclipse and in the grid of Instagram, like you can just, you can scroll for days, but that one stuck out to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did you even, you said first filters, you actually had to put filters on your camera to be able to look at it.
Yeah. Like, you have to like to in order to photograph the sun because it's so bright, mm-hmm. you have to put like a solar filter on your camera lens. And, you know, by the time I actually got around to ordering the one that I got, I had waited too long. So I couldn't really, they were all sold out. Like this eclipse event was like a big deal.
It was the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it was like the Super Bowl of events. So like all the filters on like Amazon and at B&H and Adorama and all the places, they were all sold out. So all I could get was like a sheet filter, which doesn't actually screw onto your lens. You kind of would have to like have like a thing. So I was doing like the most kind of like makeshifty type, you know, thing. So I didn't buy all the right stuff, but solar filters are crazy because did you wear the glasses, mm-hmm. the solar eclipse glasses, they're so dark, you can't see.
Yeah.
Like you can't see anything else. And that's pretty much basically what the solar filter is kind of like. It blocks so much light that when you look through your camera lens, you can't see anything but the sun. And it pretty much looks like a little tiny dot, depending on how, you know, what your zoom lens is. And I don't have like a super, super massive zoom lens. I only have a 150, which is on a micro four thirds. That's my 150 is equivalent to about a 300. And I didn't have like a magnifier or anything like that. So my pictures were about at 300 millimeters.
And did you just set it up on a tripod and then periodically you would take mm-hmm. pictures, or was the camera on a timer to take?
I was at Peachtree Center, and like the whole thing for me was like, I was thinking of going, you know, out to like, to the mountains where the like full totality, you know, was going to be. Mm-hmm. But then I started to freak out about traffic because I hate traffic and I don't drive a lot, you know.
In Atlanta, you hate traffic.
I do. Yeah. Well, I don't drive a lot. I try to walk a lot and take the streetcar and stuff. So I, you know, live near downtown, and I wasn't feeling the traffic vibe of doing all that.
Right, right.
So I was like, you know, I'm going to get a different picture than what everyone else is going to get. Mm-hmm. And I've just felt like the way for me to differentiate my pictures would be to try to pick the foreground setting, you know? And I did some like scouting to try to figure out, like I went all over town, like trying to find like, where's the best, like,
wow.
I was trying to get like a skyline view, you know, like, mm-hmm. but I realized at that part of the day, like the sun was going to be so high in the sky that I could not get a skyline silhouette view from anywhere, you know? You know, if I'd went to Stone Mountain, the sun would have been on the wrong side and, you know, all this type of stuff. So I was like, you pretty much would just have to look directly up to see it. And I was like, well, we're going to look directly up and still get something in my picture. So I picked Peachtree Center because of the buildings. You know, it's just such a like looking up spot where you're like right at that point where you look directly up and the sun would be right there and you'd see like the tips of those buildings.
And you said scouting. That fascinates me. How long were you scouting a spot for?
Probably about 3 days.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, I drove. I went to Buckhead. I thought maybe, you know, I could find like some interesting, you know, like location in Buckhead. I did that one day. Drove around like on the outskirts of like Marietta, Smyrna, you know, trying to like figure out like what the right distance would be at the right time. I know a lot of people use those like they're like apps and stuff where you can find the sun, the highest point, but technology confuses me. So I just physically go outside and I look up and, you know, I'll be like, okay, so the eclipse is going to happen at this time exactly. I'm going to go out and see about this time. Where is the sun? That's the way I do it.
What's the longest you've ever scouted for a photo?
Oh God. I don't know. Like I feel like I'm always doing that.
Uh-huh.
I'm always scouting like everywhere that I go because, I have a meetup group, a photography group, a street photography group. And I feel like, you know, I always
ATL
have to come for
ATL Urban Photo Walkers or mm-hmm. ATL Photo.
Yeah. Urban ATL Walkers. Urban Photo on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And the full name is Atlanta Urban Photo Walkers.
Okay.
And it's on meetup.com, which is like a meetup thing. But yeah, so I'm always scouting for that. You know, I'm always trying to come up with creative new ideas. It's a street photography group and it's in the city. So it's always urban, you know, urban areas in Atlanta. So I'm always looking. I feel like, you know, there are some of those type things where I'm like looking for like a particular part of the city and I'll scout it like multiple times to try to find the right, you know, the right setting for like a group that could potentially be like 100 people. Can sometimes be a little tricky. You know, there's a lot of really cool places to go out and do street photography in Atlanta, but there's not necessarily like, it's not very like welcoming to like bigger groups or like, mm-hmm. like even like just, I don't know, like Atlanta's not the greatest in terms of like being pedestrian friendly. So walkability is one thing, you know, access and MARTA, ample parking, all those type things like. There's, you know, like a lot of stuff that I just wouldn't plan for my meetup group because it's either not safe or it's like too weird or there's MARTA's not close by, all this stuff. So
is there like a photography scene in Atlanta?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's gotten really, really big in the last couple of years. I think like cityscape and street photography on like Instagram, I think, as a platform. Has kind of just been like growing for the last, you know, few years. I'd say maybe about four years or so, maybe 5 years ago is when I started to get into it. Mm-hmm. And in just these last 2 or 3 years, it's just blown up really overnight, kind of. Well, not overnight, but yeah, there's a big street photography and like cityscape photography kind of movement, I would say. And Atlanta has a lot of, you know, a lot of street photographers. But it's all over. Mm-hmm. You know, you see those pictures of these like crazy kids like scaling these like, you know, huge, like massive structures, and like some of these tragic stories of somebody like fall off of one of them, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so kind of a thing. It's a cultural thing now.
It's everywhere.
It is. Yeah.
And you're kind of, you're at the forefront. You were in AJC about it and all that. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that was pretty organic too. Like, you know, I live really close by the Jackson Street Bridge, and, you know, I shoot that pretty often. Like if I'm like, you know, if I'm sitting around and it looks like, you know, the sky is going to be like pretty awesome looking, that's the best location that I can get to the fastest, and I can run down there and be there in 10 minutes, you know? So, I think I, you know, was sharing and hashtagging it a lot. And, you know, Pete Corson, who is a journalist who found me, I think he found me through Instagram. And like, he was pretty much like, yeah, I've noticed you take a lot of pictures at this location. You take some, you know, some really good pictures. And it was just, that's how he found me, was through my Instagram feed.
That's how I found you too.
Yeah.
And when you say you're always scouting for pictures, this is something I've always been interested in photography, but just very recently I'm interested in learning it. I've always looked at it from afar, like, oh, that's cool and I like it. But like, I want to learn how and why.
Yeah.
And even in just doing the little bit of research I've done, going to places, you start to even pay more attention to the lighting and things like that.
Yeah.
But how do you know, okay, that's a photo, as opposed to that's just cool, but it's not a photo? Because you got to start editing, right?
Yeah, I feel like, honestly, I feel like anything is a photo, right?
Ooh, okay. You know? Okay, okay.
I mean, that's the job, I guess. You know, I've been a working creative, you know, professional for a long time now. And my job as a designer, you know, I used to be a painter when I was young. And now, photography, I also have been pursuing that recently. You know, my job as like the art director or creative director on any project is to like make it work, make it happen. Mm-hmm. You know, you find out what it is that, you know, kind of the end goal is, and you figure out the best way to execute it. So yeah, there's plenty of times when I feel like, you know, somebody wants you to either design or photograph or, you know, make art from something that you don't necessarily think is awesome, but you have to figure out how to make it look awesome. That's the job, right?
How do you do that?
I think you just gotta like be creative, you know, like figure out the best, you know, the best angled. I try to look at things differently. And I also try to look through like just from a different perspective, or, you know, get under it, get over it, get around it, get in it, you know, and also change up the focal plane. If you want to, like, you know, how are you going to look at it? Are you going to look at it, you know, with a wide lens or like a zoom lens, or are you going to, blur elements or, you know, distort elements? You know, it's all about like trying to figure out what the best, you know, what's the most flattering and the best looking scene going to be. And a lot of that has to do with like the tools that you're using too. So, you know, I get a little bit obsessive about, you know, things. And I guess like from a photography perspective, one thing that I'm a little bit obsessed with is lenses. So, you know, I have a lot of them.
You know. I can tell. Yeah.
You're sitting right next to him right now.
I feel so honored to be in this, the room with them, actually. I didn't know if they had their own house, actually, yeah, but it's
they
good.
They probably should have their own house.
Well, when, yeah, they're beautiful. But I want to dive in a little bit more into the actual process and such of, like, let's say I'm a stand-up comedian. Typically, you know, I've interviewed a bunch of comedians as well. I mean, 1 out of 10, maybe 1 out of 20 actual jokes is actually worth keeping down the line. How many photos do you have to take before you find that one usually?
Probably a lot more. I shoot a lot of photos. And I've been like recently trying to be more mindful and not shoot as many in terms of like volume, and try to like frame, be like a little bit more like conscious and aware. But like, I do like my own sort of like manual bracketing where I'll change the exposure manually, especially in like, you know, kind of like a challenging lighting scenario. So I'll use my thumb and just change the exposure so that I can capture, you know, the dark parts, the light parts, and the middle parts. And, you know, a lot of times I'll like kind of put those together in Lightroom and Photoshop. So I shoot multiple images of the same thing. And yeah, I mean, I have like just, God, I have over 100,000 images in my Lightroom catalog, which is a lot to manage. Actually, man, I have,
can you manage 100,000 photos?
Not very easily. It's, you know, like, that's kind of why I'm trying to be more like conservative about it, because it's just like taking over my life. I had to buy like a 20 terabyte server to like house all this stuff. It's insane.
Cool. You started, I mean, we've only been doing, how long have you been doing photography specifically?
You know, I used to have a film camera, and like my dad always had cameras. He collected like old cameras and stuff. And, you know, I've had a camera for like probably my whole life. I've always had access to cameras. One of my aunts was a professional photographer. And, you know, photography has always kind of been part of my life and part of my world. It's just, you know, like the computer is just like, it's another paintbrush. It's another tool, you know. But I've been more serious about photography just in recent years, probably in about the last 5 years. And, it was all due to, you know, I never really had very much like professional training in photography. Everything was just sort of self-taught, and I just kind of like would pick the right film speed and, you know, in my film camera and just kind of wing it. And I mean, I would use like makeshift lights and, you know, stuff like that.
Like what? Out of what?
Lamps and like those like you like really awful lights that you can get from Home Depot, where you just, it's like a like a plug that plugs into a wall with a light bulb thing on it, and you just screw a light bulb.
Yeah,
and you,
like the yellow.
Right. Yeah. So I would have just like no real professional like stuff. I was just like make my own lighting or make my own sets and stuff. And I shot all my own photography for my student portfolio when I was at the Art Institute. Well, I was a graphic design major there, but, you know, I did all my own like photography, you know, got all my friends to model for me and stuff. You know, so when I started to get into photography a little bit more professionally was right around the time that mirrorless cameras were kind of had hit the market. Okay. And I was, you know, I had an Nikon at that time, and I felt like it was such a like heavy and big camera that I never really wanted to take it anywhere with me. So I also didn't really like that camera very much. It was hard to use, and I didn't think it was that user friendly. And I didn't have a whole lot of technical skills. And the Nikon was just kind of hard and clunky and cumbersome, and it's heavy, and oh, it had this big camera bag and all these, like, had a flash unit and multiple lenses and just all this stuff that I was going to carry around. I never wanted to carry with me. So mirrorless really appealed to me, the smaller, you know, the smaller cameras. And I kind of fell in love with this one camera. It was a Lumix G3, and it wasn't released yet at the time. The G2 was out, and they were kind of talking up the release of the G3. And I was like, that's what I'm getting. I sold my Nikon on Craigslist, and I used the money to buy a mirrorless camera. And it's just like changed my life.
But you shooting film, you definitely have to be more mindful in that, as opposed to almost a lot of times people will take photography now and just kind of spray and pray. Oh, I got something, and there's something in there.
Oh yeah, everybody with a cell phone is a photographer now, right?
is that annoying to you?
I mean, you know, sure, as you know,
purist, you know.
I mean, photography, like for one thing, I wouldn't like for years. I would be really, really self-conscious about calling myself a photographer because, I mean, I went to school with some people who were extremely disciplined and very educated and had some photography chops that I could like never even hope to touch, you know, in terms of like their, you know, dedication and the, you know, the training and the degree and all of the like technical knowledge base that they had and how beautiful their, you know, photography was. So like when I went to school, a lot of my friends actually were in photography and not design. I mean, I have a lot of friends from the graphic design program that I majored in also, but I kept in contact with a lot of photographers from that time period. And, you know, like I didn't see myself on their level. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like it's sort of
out of a respect for it.
Right. Yeah. For sure.
So now, I'm sorry, that sun is right in my face. Oh, I was trying to play it cool, but I'm like, this is going to be.
It's the afternoon sun here. It gets you really good.
Oh, we're good. That one's good. It was just that window. You know, lighting.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you see it washing out my pale face. As you see, you have an eye for composition. That's what your website said.
Mm-hmm.
What exactly do you mean by that?
You know, I mean, I think that's like just part of it. Like everything is a design to me. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I see composition in the world and in this room and like everything that I'm doing, you know. And I think too, like, that's really the number one thing in order to like make sense out of something that might be chaos. You have to figure out where to put it or how to frame it or, you know, how to have it make sense or communicate the right message. And it's all in where you decide to organize things. And you gotta look around. You know, sometimes you have to change your position. You have to move. You have to get up and walk around and go look at it from the other side or something like that. Yeah, I guess I've always had that.
Well, you find a lot of, and composition, just in my, you know, very photography for dummies research, composition is like kind of what makes up the photo in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I'm taking a picture of this water bottle, Fontus water. I was dumb. We'll edit that out. No, we won't. Too lazy. But like if I took a photo, so this composition may be like the water bottle, the mouse, maybe the computer screen, and maybe this lens. Would that be what composition is? Like what makes it up?
It depends what you want the picture to be of. Like I would probably like pick a focal point, you know.
Okay.
And like you could, what I encounter a lot is, you know, just with your friends or whatever, you know, just hanging out, and whether you're with friends who are not photographers or not creative, if you hand someone a, you know, like I do this all the time because I'm such like a control freak, but I'll be like, okay, I'm going to take a picture of you and I'm going to take it like this. And I want you to stand right there and I'm going to take it like this. And so look at this picture. Okay. Now I want you to take a picture of me just like this. And then they go 15 feet away and then they like get like the totally like different, like, and I'm like, no, you're too far away now. You have to stand right here. You know, so you can take a very different, you know, very different picture based on how close you are, how far away you are, and what kind of lens you have. So,
and what makes it up, I guess, what you want.
And I guess like, I mean, I'm just looking at this stuff you're talking about, which is just basic like stuff on my desk, but like, it's kind of like, if you try to get too many subject, you know, elements, then it could be kind of like chaotic. So I'd pick one, you know, like pick one thing to put most of the focus on and have the other things kind of fall away or just kind of be supporting characters of that one topic.
I have found in some just amateur photography, I keep playing down, like you're saying, I'm not a photographer. I just keep playing down photography. I tried this one thing once, but like I went to like a bike race and I was like, I want to take a cool photo here. Just instinctually, I was just buzzing about it for some reason. And I literally walked all the way around the track taking pictures. And it took till I got all the way to the end of the track to where I caught this cool photo of like one guy here and then the rest of them blurred behind him. But it took that entire process.
Sure, yeah.
Do you find that to be like pretty normal?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's like, you know, my favorite style of photography, which is street photography and cityscape photography. Like, you know, I think the reason that is because I just kind of like to I like to walk. I like to be in the city. You know, I kind of like to just walk outside my house and take off with my camera and just kind of get lost, you know, just walk around and, you know, I enjoy that, you know, not everybody does. So, you know, yeah, I think it's about the journey and you can come across like, I mean, I go to the same spots. I mean, I live very near downtown, so I hit a lot of those, you know, the scene on the regular. But you know, you can walk by the same place like 100 times, or you can walk by the same place every single day, and the one day that you are passing by and the light's perfect and there's something special about that moment, whether it's like you know, someone or something that's present that's not always there, and then that's when you get your picture, you know. So I'm always telling people, you don't just like, you know, I just don't decide. Like, I'm not like, you know, hey, I'm going to leave right now and go take an awesome ass picture of the Jackson Street Bridge.
Right.
If I tried to do that, you know, I could take a picture from that location right now, but it doesn't look great. You know, like I mm-hmm. look outside and tell it's not the time.
You can just look outside and be like, this is not the time to take a photo.
Yeah, for sure.
What makes it the time?
Well, a lot of times for the type of photography that I like to take, golden hour, you know, like sunset.
Okay.
You know, within an hour of sunrise or sunset is going to get the best lighting for like, you know, cityscape photography. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like there's certain kinds of days where you can just kind of look outside and be like, this is the right day for photographing this. Like right now we're kind of on the edge of like fall is sort of, on its way out here. Yeah. And the trees have been really, really beautiful in Atlanta in the last several weeks, you know? So, there have been days when I've been like, you know, there's nice clouds in the sky. It's really blue sky, pretty, you know, gorgeous sky, the puffy white, beautiful clouds. And all these trees look great. I'm going to go hit Piedmont Park today. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't go on a day when the sky just looks kind of boring. If it's just like empty, there's no cloud cover and the coloring it's not that blue color. It's this weird, like kind of a strange whitish color today. You know?
Yeah.
So yeah, today's not a good day for me. I wouldn't go out today.
What about indoors? Do you play around with like artificial lighting?
Yeah. Yeah.
Experiment with that. How do you
do
that?
Like, and I have like this cool ice light, which I don't use nearly enough.
What is an ice light?
I'll have to show it to you later. It's like, it looks like a lightsaber.
Oh, interesting.
It has like a light on it and it's a long like stick thing. And you uh-huh. can, it has a, the base of it can mount to like just any tripod mount. And it has like a lever so that you can make it brighter or dimmer. And you can use like color gels with it. And then it came with like an amber filter. You know, and sometimes I'll use my ice light, you know, for like if I had to like photograph a model or like, do a client shoot. Or sometimes I'll do like a little desktop type, you know, product setting or something like that, you know, and I'll use that. And I've had, you know, like experimenting with some like color gels and things like that, which are, it's a lot of fun, but it does like, it requires a lot more like gear and stuff.
Yeah, I can tell you.
And I kind of just like to, I like to just like grab my cameras and head out the door. So I don't like to lug around all that stuff. But yeah, sometimes I'll get in the mood for it and I'll, you know, set something up. Usually a lot of times, like what's funny is like for me, you know, since I work on the computer all day, you know, I have a graphic design job, I'm always making visual things for clients and stuff. You know, when it starts to feel too much like work, sometimes I kind of personally lose interest.
Oh.
So I think maybe that's why a street photography appeals to me, because I get to kind of like walk it off, you know, walk off some of the like steam and the stillness of being at a computer all the time.
How do you overcome that barrier of, I'm not really inspired by this, this is more of just like work at this point? How do you overcome that barrier? Because you got to be creative.
Yeah.
Still.
I just feel like if something is just not flowing and not gelling for me, I just walk away from it and come back later. You know, and I think that's one of my number one things is if you're like spending a lot of time on something and it's not going anywhere, you're wasting your time. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I view my time as pretty valuable. I bill hourly for my time. And I'm pretty efficient. You know, I know what I can do in the time that it takes to do it. You know, and I'm also beholden to like scope and budget and things like that. So if I'm not being like productive or effective, I just put it down and sleep on it.
Good to know.
So, I mean, I'm constantly like, there's always some kind of problem I'm trying to work out in my mind about like, you know, something that I know that I have to like do for a client or a project. And, you know, I just, all those thoughts are always kind of marinating in the background, you know, for me. So, I kind of will start a project. I'll spend some time on it, get into it, like try to get like the gears moving. And then I always step away from it and come back to it later, because when you come back to it later with fresh eyes, you can really, see where it is going well and what needs to be made better. And, you know, sometimes you throw stuff together too fast, you kind of miss, you know, but like hasty won't be as good. But I like to put things down, walk away from them, and come back, you know, with fresh eyes. And that's my process anyway.
And like you said, you value time. I'm big on time management and valuing time. And it is a precious asset. Are you big on sort of, are you able to, from the organization standpoint, especially as a creative, you can get a little scattered brained and everywhere. Are you, do you have a, maybe some tips or a regimen that you follow that helps your daily routine like that?
You know, I mean, I can procrastinate just like anyone. you know, I'm pretty good with, sorry about that.
Oh, you're great. Speaking of time,
you're like, I'll silence my phone.
This is my billing hours going off, Joel. You're on hour two right now.
I don't know. Like I'm like kind of, you know, there are certain parts of my personality that are not really like the typical, you know, creative. Like I am like really punctual and I'm really like very much like I expect, you know, that, mm-hmm. you know, if you say you're going to be somewhere at a certain time that you're going to show up, you're not going to be an hour late or something like that, you know? And I like to be on time and I like to show up for things. I also have like a bad memory. So, you know, if I do flake out and forget and, you know, drop the ball on something, it's really makes me feel awful. And I, you know, definitely done that before. But the number one thing that I do for myself is I put a pin in my calendar and I just put alerts. So yeah.
Gotcha.
You know, mm-hmm. but I mean, most of the deadlines I work on are kind of deadlines that I set for myself, right? You know, for a, you know, client project, you know, most of my clients are, you know, I work from a home office, so I don't have to be in anyone else's office and I don't really have to be at the beck and call of any one particular client, but I do work on a lot of things, you know, all kind of in sort of concert, you know?
Yeah.
And jumping back and forth sometimes can get a little crazy, you know, but I will put work blocks on my calendar for, okay, Monday from like, you know, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., I'm going to work on this project.
Gotcha.
And then at, you know, after 2 p.m., from 2 p.m. to 6 p.m., I'm going to put this other project on deck. Because then if I don't do that, just like anyone, you know, I'll go down the rabbit hole of like, oh, well, I just got an email and this is important right now. You know, like I just have to like shut it out and get focused when, you know, if I have a deadline or something that I'm working towards.
Well, what if you're in that work block and you are hitting that friction like you referred to? Will you just, will you not even almost like leave the room? Maybe you just, Timmy, take a step back and breathe for a second.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Now I'll walk my dog or get out and, you know, or just run to Target and do like something that gets me out of this.
You mm-hmm. But yeah,
I'll just break it up.
Yeah. Okay.
You have to.
Yeah.
You know, you have to. Now, I mean, I do have like, I feel like I've been doing graphic design for so long that I can reliably, consistently, like, you know, there are some tasks that you don't really need to think about, you know, if you're just making revisions to something and this one says change this from pink to blue or whatever, I just bang that out and get it done. But know, there's certain parts of what I do that are just as like routine as anyone's job.
Totally. And the thing about working from home, which I do as well, is you have the freedom to do whatever you want, which means you have the freedom to do whatever you shouldn't as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I realized in my process, I literally just have to like close my office door.
Yeah.
I can't get myself because I'll just veer off.
I feel like that's like a personality thing,
yeah.
right? Because I think there are a lot of people who probably couldn't successfully work from their home setting. You know, there are, you know, certain people who got to go into a place of business or, you know, be in a different environment in order to like get their work done. You know, like for me, like I can actually do my work. I can kind of self, you know, manage.
Right.
Like,
right.
You know, but not everybody can. I know like certain people have been like, I can't work from home. Every time I work from home, I end up doing laundry and doing this and doing that. And, you know, like, I guess like I'm wired that way. Like I can effectively like work from my home office actually better than I can work anywhere else. I don't actually like going to other people's office environments. It's worse for me. Like if there are people around and it's too noisy, I have no idea how this open concept working thing, like co-working spaces, I have no idea how that's effective for anyone. Cause it's just nothing but a, like a crippling distraction for me.
How are you drumming up this business? Like, what is, because being creative is one skill set, but then the business, some people are really good at art, but the business side are terrible at. How have you been able to find the balance in those?
Well, I think, you know, like for me, like I feel like I get a lot of word of mouth business.
Okay.
I'm mostly talking about my graphic design business and my website design business. I left, you know, I left a job probably about 2007 where I had, you know, worked up to the role of creative director. And I had, I had contact with a lot of different people in that role, and I worked on a lot of really, you know, exciting projects. And I think people came to know me, they came to trust me, they came to, you know that I was like reliable and I could deliver and I could do good quality work. And when I left that job, freelancing just, it was the right time for me. And I had tried to freelance, you know, at other times in my career, and it was not very successful. And I wasn't able to bring in customers or bring in enough money. And I always ultimately had to go back to looking for a job. But there was just something in the mix with, at that time in my life, I just started to get a lot of word of mouth business. And, you know, I have regular clients and they know they can count on me. And I feel like I have a little bit of a, you know, a little bit of a client base, that trusts me. And I, have been fortunate in that way. And I, you know, I also feel like that, you know, maybe it's hard to find good talent. You know,
true.
It's hard to find. I think what's really hard to find in creative people is it's hard to find creative people who also understand like the business aspects of things and like budget and scope and like what's realistic versus what's not. And, you know, so, I mean, I feel like I can kind of put all those things together and I can work really well with like, you know, whether it's developers or client management or, you know, directly with, you know, client. You know, creative people don't always have the best soft skills, and they don't always have the best client facing skills. But I think that I can do like a lot of those peripheral skill type things in a well enough way that makes my clients happy.
Do you have any tips for creatives who may be, like you said, not so great at the peripheral skills?
You got to work on it.
Just make it intentional.
You have to, yeah, you've got to like seriously get very good at like tone and communication, using the right words and the right language. And I mean, I had to do that too, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I think I was in a job at one point because I had worked at a lot of smaller companies. And then, this other company that I started working for, there was a little bit of a, you know, bigger footprint. It was more people. And I had never had peer reviews before. And, you know, and I like went to my first peer review, like with my like manager, and I got all these high marks on like how great I was doing for like, you know, the creative parts of my job. But I was just getting killed on, you know, communication and email and like, I guess like my tone and how it was coming across to like other people in other departments who weren't in the creative department. So, you know, I mean, I just worked on it. I took that criticism and I was like, I'm not going to get this criticism again. I'm going to fix it.
Yeah.
You know? I would say get better at it.
And almost you could say auditing yourself, give yourself the peer review or get somebody to give you the peer review of like what you're good at, what you're not.
Yeah.
And then start to build up your weaknesses to make them strengths.
Yeah. And I also, I just think that there's I feel very, very much like if I'm going to work on something and people are going to know that I had something to do with it, it's got to be good.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just can't let something go out the door that's not perfect. If it's not, if it's not up to like what I think is like an acceptable, like quality standard, then, you know, I can't put my name on it. Right. So, especially I mean, I think that, there's that too. So,
but I have heard people say like done is better than perfect.
It is, but you know, like it depends. I would say, yes to that in some scenarios, but I would also say that if someone is paying, like let's say a premium rate for, you know, like a particular kind of creative and well, I guess like, you know, the your portfolio. They're looking at your work. They're like, this is what we want from you. We see this on your website. We want ours to look as good as this or better, right? So I feel like in order to charge those fees, you got to bring it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like yeah. The worst feeling in the world for me would be for someone to hire me because they liked something that I did, and for them to walk away from like a like an experience working with me being like, I don't feel like I got that from her. Like that would bother me.
And you don't get the word of mouth,
right?
Off of that,
and you won't get another opportunity. Exactly. Yeah.
Especially if it's going to be up in Times Square or something. Sure. You want to make sure you've been in Times Square.
I have been.
Very impressive.
It's cool.
And
right?
Did you do the streetcar project?
It was the streetcar. Yeah. It was pictures of the streetcar. And, I was excited about the streetcar just because I live on right off the streetcar route. But, I couldn't wait for the streetcar to open. So like the day that they started opening it, actually before then, they were doing test runs. They were getting all their drivers and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was shooting the streetcar before it was even before they were letting people on it. Like I was out shooting the test car, routes. And I think I just got pictures of the streetcar before anybody else did.
And you're good. That helps too. I'm sure people just went up there with their iPhones and maybe took some.
Yeah,
you
maybe.
Actually.
I staked it out.
You scouted it out again.
I did. Yeah. I went very deliberately and would camp out at the stop that I wanted to shoot and figure out what kind of shot I wanted to take. I'd set my camera up and I'd wait for it. And if the streetcar comes by one time, it's going to be another 15 minutes before it comes again. So, if you're going to shoot that, probably going to shoot it for at least an hour.
So you almost see the photo before you even take it. You know what you want the photo to be.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of times. Not always.
How much does the editing and all that play into it? Because if you go to your page or if you see your photo, you can tell it's your photo. Mm-hmm. You almost have a voice in mm-hmm. photography, and a lot of photographers do. So how much of it is taking the photo and then how much of the work is actually in editing and such?
I mean, it's kind of equal, I think, You have to take a good photo to begin with, right? So you have to have all of the all the elements and, the rule of thirds and the composition and, your foreground, middle ground, background type thing. All that stuff has to be present in the photo before you take it or when you take it, I guess. But for me, I do post-processing is part of the creative artistic part, that mm-hmm. I enjoy the most. So I don't always know exactly what the edits are going to look like, but I can usually have an idea. When you see the sky looks amazing, definitely going to shoot it, definitely shooting this. So sometimes I have a little bit of an idea how they're going to come out, and just based on what that moment is, a day that's really foggy and really gray is going to look totally different in, what that picture comes out versus a day where it's really sunny or there's a really pink, pretty, purple, pink, orange sunset or something like that. Those would be two totally different type of pictures. So I would have a little bit of an idea what they're going to look like, but mm-hmm. not exactly,
Is there, and kind of you're talking about this, the point and shoot people can be a little annoying too. People just doing their cell phone cameras. You know what I mean?
I didn't say that.
No, okay. I guess that's not on the record. Her face was said different, but it's,
What?
Well, what are some major mistakes you're seeing just these novice people make?
I try not to be too critical of
They can even, I consider myself a novice as well. So it's even learning from my perspective too.
For myself, I feel like the horizon should be straight and all of the lines, all the vertical lines should be perfectly vertical. I can't stand it when people clip the tip of a building, the very top of the building is just cut off right at the tip. That would bother me.
And that's composition, right? That would play in a composition.
Yeah. And, I also think in order for because I also do tilted, cropping sometimes where I'll crop something and I'll tilt my camera so that the horizon is not straight. It's at a 45 degree angle or a 30 degree angle or something like that. And I think that you can get away with that if you have the right leading lines in order to make that composition actually work. But what I think the thing that I see that is the most annoying is having like no sense of composure at all, where it is literally just like a stand up and point your camera and just snap it without those lines, making sure the lines are there. That's probably, yeah, the number one thing that I think is annoying.
Because I've heard people say in my research, some people take photos and some people make photos.
Right, sure.
It's the big difference.
Yeah, anyone can take a photo, right?
Right, yeah.
I mean, just push the button.
That's true. Well, that was a lot. I appreciate all you really shared right there, to be honest. Being a fan of your photography, I just wanted to dive into even just how. Because your photography is so unique and it's so eye-catching. And as soon as I remember seeing, I think I reposted that photo, actually. It was like the eclipse one. It blew my mind so much. I was like, this is everybody was posting their eclipse photos. I was like, I don't have a good one, but this account does. Follow her. It was amazing.
I remember that. I do remember that. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your time here. I know it is very valuable. So I appreciate you spending it with me on here and before. You were very generous and just all your photography knowledge.
Thanks for reaching out.
No problem.
I'm happy to do it. It was a lot of fun. It was my first podcast.
Ever?
Well, yeah. I think actually I might have worked on a podcast a long time ago, but it's my first podcast being like on this side. Yes.
Yeah. Very nice. Well, I'm happy to be the first of hopefully many, because you're a talent that people should definitely learn more from. You got a lot of information. And your pug is awesome too.
She is pretty awesome.
Miso. I mean, my wife didn't hear that. The pug is not awesome, dear. We don't want a dog.
Oh, right? You want a pug?
No.
You definitely want a pug. Pugs are the best.
Well, before we get out of here, is there anything else you want the world to know?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know. I guess, yeah, pugs are amazing. you put me on the spot. I'm supposed to say something awesome, right?
Or it could just be, hey, guys, follow me here and I do this and offer these services.
Oh, well, I guess, yeah, sure. It
could be that too.
Yeah, graphicnation.com is my website. Yeah, and I do all things visual, creative, from photography, graphic design, and website design. And also, if you're into street photography and you're ever in Atlanta and you want to come join a meetup, Atlanta Urban Photo Walkers. Or ATL Urban Photo on Instagram. And we meet about once monthly and it's free for anyone, all levels, you know, all experience, all kinds of cameras.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And it's fun. It's a fun group. And we do a lot of like really interesting, cool street photo walks.
Yeah, and the website alone is amazing. You had pictures of Madonna on there.
On graphicnation.com.
Yeah, on your website. Yeah. Not the urban photographers.
Yeah. But one of my paintings was in Madonna's Rebel Heart Tour.
What?
Yeah, the one in the hall. And I'll show it to you.
Wow. Wow.
So
many layers.
I don't know. You know, I mean, I just submitted it to an open call for fan art. And, you know, I wasn't sure if I would be selected or not, but it worked out pretty good.
The talent knows talent.
You know, we'll see.
Well, Lauren Hawley.
Thank you.
Thank you for being on Hot Breath.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
Yee! We made it. That is it. Hot Brethren and Sisterin, episode 113 in the books. Thanks for your valuable time. If you do enjoy this podcast, let me tell you, you would love the podcast I started with my wife. It's called Atlanta Buyers Club. It is currently on Audio Boom, where this podcast is hosted. We'll be on iTunes soon, but we're going around pretty much discovering Atlanta one date at a time, and we give cool reviews. We just reviewed the Miracle Bar, which is a Christmas-themed bar, which is, if you're looking for a hangover not only from loud Christmas music, but just sugary drinks, that is the place. That was a good time. But however you want to connect, you know, I'm Joel Byers. I'm around. I host a weekly comedy show at Java Monkey in Decatur, Georgia, every Wednesday at 8. That's been voted best of Atlanta by Creative Loafing. JoelByersComedy.com if you want to pick up my book for fun. It's all about comedy writing and generating ideas, of course. We have the podcast. I don't even know what I'm plugging now. I'm just kind of rambling in the outro. I won't hold you up. Let's get you on with your day. I'm sorry. But in the meantime, in between time, this is every Monday, 8 a.m. I release these. Patreon, of course, patreon.com/hotbreathpod. If you would like to kind of contribute to the podcast, I spend hours upon hours of each of these episodes, not only putting them together, but even just researching them and travel and even reaching out to the guests to schedule. It's all time consuming. And if you'd like to kind of show support for that and feel good about it, you can drop a little tidbit in our stocking over at patreon.com/hotbreathpod. But that's really it, people. This podcast is all about living and learning, educating and entertaining, and I appreciate you being a part of it. If you want to request a guest, you can hit me up on social media at Joel Byers Comedy, or leave an iTunes review. You can tell me who you want to hear on there. And that goes a long way as far as getting it read live on the air. So if you have a product you want to plug, I've had sponsors throughout this whole over 100 Hot Breathisode run here. I've had various sponsors. If you're looking to sponsor the show, maybe get your product out there more, get an event you have coming up out there, contact me on there, on iTunes or whatever the internet is out there, and we'll make it happen, Captain. But we're rapidly approaching 2018. This is so exciting. Hee-hee-hee. So, of course, thank you to my engineer, Amon Garner, keeping these sounding crystal clear. And of course, last but not least, my wife, Erin Byers, for making this theme song. She also made the theme song for our podcast, Atlanta Byers Club. And she makes all things possible. So thank you to everyone out there who made this week possible. And I will see you next Monday, right here on Hot Breath. Hot Breath. This episode of Hot Breath is sponsored by our Patreon. If any of our content has helped your comedy career, join our Patreon linked in the show notes and get positive comedy karma for life. Probably.